Welcome to Cognitive Rampage Podcast, late as ever. Sorry, kind of. Me and Nowdy get carried away sometimes chatting. This time it wasn't technology's fault. It was all my fault. Yeah. We're late on the podcast, the functional fucking rampage, which it's been a minute since we've had one. My boy has been gallivanting the fucking world, dosing everybody with some functional patterns, rampages all over the fucking globe, dude. Welcome the fuck back home to safety, man. Missed the shit out of you, bro. Good to see that beautiful little brown face.
It's good to be back, man. Honestly, I'm probably done traveling for quite some time. I'm going to probably do maybe one more course. It's looking like it'll be in the UK and it'll be in Belgium. I'll be doing some striking biomechanics seminars with my boy John X Alves. In case you guys didn't see before, I wound up having him. I had him kicking some baseball bats. He was snapping Louisville. He snapped four Louisville sluggers and whatnot. So he'll be teaching some of that. Good. Yeah, it's unbelievable. The guy's just I got to hang out with that guy for this last week, and it was just
made me think of that Bloodsport movie, right? When the dude's like back there kneeing the shit, just kicking the concrete wall or whatever before the fucking fight.
Yeah, but I think it's funny is that, you know, like I had seen another guy named Melkor Maynor, and he had broken some baseball bats on I think it was on National Geographic. And so I'd asked Jonix, I had Jonix kick me before and just devastate people with kicks without any power. Like he puts nothing behind his kicks and they just come out just they devastate you. The way he goes about it, his approaches and with regard to striking, is that he doesn't want to make hits any strike that he hits you with hurt. He wants to make it incapacitate you. So where he neurologically creates a disconnect between the muscle and your brain, so that at that point you have no opportunity to tough it out. So I was asking, hey man, I was like, you have to be able to break a baseball bat with your kicks. There's no way. I know you got to kick harder than that other dude.
You would instigate that kind of shit. You would be, back, be like functioning.
It's marketing 101 right there. Think about that, bro. For most people are going to be like, yeah, of course I'll work with that guy. We can break a baseball. But the crazy part is, bro, that he can teach people to do that. I'll eventually head back down to San Diego one of his students is like 17 years old. I know this kid can break a baseball bat probably just as easily. And he's, maybe about my size. He's a small dude, just like me, and because he's so young, and I know he could break a baseball bat. But yeah, I've been traveling. Was just in San Diego last week. Pretty much getting updated on the information that I needed to get with John X, sharpening my own strikes just to make sure that I can keep up with the guy when we run the courses in Europe. But that'll probably be the last traveling I do for a long time, unless it's like for other aspects of business and whatnot. Right now, we're in the process of making our own pulley machines. We're making one that's gonna be fucking incredible. I can't believe we're even going to get to
that. One more trip, man. You have to make a trip here if you need to write it off somehow.
Hell, I could totally do it. It's no problem, man. I could definitely do it out there. We could do a podcast straight right there in person. For something like that, I'd be down to get out into nature and whatnot. But
come on, you're going to come in the kayak with me for about 3 to 5 days. You'll have your own and come do what I go do for about, we'll do, I don't know how long you want to go out there. We can go five. Weather depends on a lot, though, but we got to go soon, though. Definitely can't go in wintertime.
Yeah, I'm down. No, totally. I would love to do something like that, man. But unless it's for chilling, I'm not traveling anymore, Adam. Because the thing that people don't know about traveling, especially as much as I've done it, where it's like I'm going – my job's already pretty strenuous already. When you run the classes as intensely as I do, it's very, very intense. And it's not just in the sense that it's intense because I'm covering so many technicalities, which I am. But it's even more intense when you consider the emotional demons that people need to confront when you start revealing biomechanics. Like people come into the courses thinking, I'm just going to exercise. That's about the extent of what I'm going to do here. And then it's like, oh no, now I'm going to confront, some deep problems that are associated into my tissues. And now, oh crap. So then I have to somehow maintain people's emotional balance and just kind of remind them that, yeah, you're okay. What you're going through is normal. You should feel no sense of discomfort. You should be okay.
That's what nature does for me, man. What I mean? Like you're doing for them when they're showing up at an FP gym or something. I know the other trainers do too. That's why all the more so, man. Yeah, you got to come like 3 or 5 days, man. We'll take a little bit of food, but for the most part, we'll eat whatever we catch by rod. You know what I mean?
I can go a good week without eating food, no problem. Anyway, so even if we don't eat, I'm sure I could. I'd be fine.
That's where I want to heal him, man. That kind of reminds me that, like, you know, you're good. You know, you're in the good spot. Just returning kind of centers me is going out, you know, places like that. Kind of, I did a video a while ago being like fourth on the food chain. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. A humble fucking reminder that, holy shit, that's why I love spearfishing so much is it's you. I don't use spear guns for the most part if I don't have to, but me, the Hawaiian sling, the fish, the salt water, and whatever the fuck is swimming by. You know what I mean? It's like I'm stealing a fish, but at the same time, there's about four things around here that could easily and they don't need a fucking pole. You know what I mean? They're just gonna. Yeah.
You know, how do you get water out there?
Yeah, well, where I take it. You take about 5 gallons, so you measure out for what you're gonna do for what you need for the day.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Very interesting. Definitely. Yeah, no, definitely. I'll definitely have to make it out there with you at some point, man. But
I got a couple pictures on Instagram of the kayak. Where I usually go is off of the south end of Marco Island. I push off down there and kind of go down the edge of the 10,000 islands at the top because it's just nothing out there. You know what I mean? Boats even get lost sometimes in a backwater back there. A bunch of drug runners, what they used to do is they'd come up to the 10,000 islands and then only old school captains that knew their way back to the 10,000 islands could guide back there. So there was no fucking way you were getting them and they'd haul that up into Everglades City, et cetera. So I kind of go down that coastline on the kayak. Now you can ride the current out. What you don't want to be doing is fighting the current. So you ride the tide out, fish it up, pull up, let it change directions or whatever, relax, eat something. When the tide kind of switches back over, ride that further. Take it a couple days south and you can ride it back home the same way.
That's dope, man. That is freaking dope.
Yeah, it's
fun. Hell yeah. That'd be something that we'll have to, if I travel again, that'll probably have to be for something like that, man. It's going to have to be some kind of an escape.
Yeah, there's a, I'll give away my little secret fishing spot, but you got to know how to get there anyway. Or if you do, I liked it so much. There was an island that I would camp up on called, Morgan Key. And that's the name of my daughter. So I would always kind of ride that tide across, you know what I mean? All the way to Morgan Key, sleep there and then, you know, ride it back.
That's sick. Yeah, man. But it's incredible how much our culture kind of puts us so out of balance that we almost have to go to, I guess it's not even going extreme. I guess it's just, it's amazing that humans lived in that. And then now we're living in this electronic age, what we're in right now. That's just so freaking disconnected to go do it. It's fascinating to me that to me seems foreign. You get what I mean? Like that's right. How far gone we are. Isn't that crazy? I was just thinking about that right now. Like that's crazy that we're that far gone from nature and where we came from our origins, that for me, thinking about doing a 3-4-5 day trip like that with you gives me a little bit of anxiety.
Yeah. That's kind of why I do it. That little edge of reminder of going, you know, you come back when you realize shit. You know, you have some run-ins, you know, you maybe a bull shark or two, or you catch a fin or some shit like that, depending, you know, not it's not frequent, you know, but when that happens in that moment, you kind of go, what's important? You see what the reality is and how, you know, vulnerable we really are in life. And for me, that reminder, shit, I started a company. My daughter actually last night brought me a business card that she found digging out through her stuff. It was Primal Nature. And what I did is I took people on primal adventures now, not these nature fucking vacation campground take picture shit. It was literally what we said on kayaks like this, living. It was Zuma's Island, even on a boar hunt, dude. I had an experience with a crocodile, by the way. That moment I felt face to face with that. I felt everyone needed to feel that. You know what I mean? That kind of what people probably reference when you need to get in the ring with a black belt and something and let them beat your ass so you get a little humbling. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
And for me, nature was that to me. It was that holy, whoa, you know, perspective placer. You know, it just puts you there. So I did that shit for like 2 years, man. And then there was insurance issues. outside of the insurance issue, I just kind of quit. You know what I mean? So
yeah, totally. Well, that's, I mean, that shit's kind of, I mean, I guess it's not dangerous if you know what you're doing, but still, that's kind of, I mean, when you consider the random variables that could potentially happen, like with weather shifts and shit like that, I can imagine it can be a little bit dangerous at times.
Yeah, man. Shit, in the Florida weather, man, it's crazy. Any mariner down here knows that you can be out on the water, and if you're not watching the clouds, any minute, you know, you turn around and shit, you know, you're cut off from land quick. And those storms around here, they all know it pulls up, rains real hard for a little bit, and moves on. And so, you know, you got to be real careful. around
damn
here. You know what I mean?
Well, shit. Hopefully you make it back in the next few days, bro. Because I know you're about to go on yours. So
yeah, shit. I'm nothing, dude. My brother, he's out of his fucking mind. Like, I don't know. It's kind of cool, really. But I mean, he's been in his boat from Marco Island, crosses that Gulf all the way through in one day, push back. He's running on a single engine too. I mean, him and I used to go offshore. He would do it more than I, but we'd be so far out there, man, like off the Marathon Key. So you could run out. It's called going out to the humps, but you go beyond that and you hit these international waters, bro, where it's like 1,200, you know, 2,500 or 2,000 feet deep type shit, man. And it's an eerie feeling, bro. And you're just out there and he'd shut the engine off. We just float for a little bit. And you sit out there and you're like, whew, you know, and out there, there's little riptide things on the top of the water. So what you can see is off in the distance, there'll be areas of water that's really rough and then patches that are flat. And those rip curls are kind of everywhere. And then you're kind of sitting in that little boat looking at the maze that you kind of got to get back through. But I mean, that's one of those humbling experiences again, you know, and he does shit like that, man. That dude, he went over and bow hunted somewhere off in Zimbabwe where you're not allowed firearms. Dropped his ass off at night out there. His guide was like, you know, we can't get to you, right? He's like, yeah. And he told that story actually on the podcast he was on with us, man. He does that primal stuff. He lives up in Alaska now. He does that shit.
Yeah, see, for me, that's something that I eventually have to tackle that monster. But yeah, I think it's kind of concerning the fact that even does give a person anxiety when you consider where we came from. It's just, it's kind of ridiculous when I think about it.
Yeah. Shit. I find more anxiety, honestly, when I get on I-4, you know, when I'm pulling on the fucking highway, I'm telling you, man, if it's pouring down rain and I'm pulling on some major highway where the speed limit's 70, man, please put me in my kayak with 6 bull sharks around me. I'm fine.
See, I don't get anxiety from that shit at all. I'm well adapted to that. For myself personally, like I have no problems with traffic or driving or dealing with, like I'm very. That's the funny part too, man. Is I remember when I was back home, I came from a small town, and you know, I wasn't necessarily like super into nature, but I would go on hikes and whatnot, and I felt fine. And then anytime that I would go to the city, I'd see all these cars driving everywhere. I'd come over here to Seattle and I would be like, oh my God, I can't even imagine adapting to this. Now it's like nothing. Now it's fascinating to me that in a decade I would completely just fully adapt into this. And now what I'm slowly learning as I get older is how to like maladapt to this shit. And now I'm at the phase of moving my operation outside of the city and eventually just literally going in the middle of nowhere and having my facility like completely like gone from all this crap, you know, and maybe coming by and visiting for every now and then. But I just don't know how sustainable it is to live on all this shit, especially with all this just with all this traffic, the noise pollution, the light pollution. It's just so much shit. It doesn't seem like cities are the most sustainable thing. As I'm getting older and I'm out here, there's things that I do to help me. Like I do my hot cold therapies, my myofascial release, my obviously the functional patterns movement. That probably helps me more than anything. But it's like I'm finding myself that I'm adapting to the city, but then as I further adapt into the city, I'm beginning to realize like I'm not really, it's like I'm just compensating for a really poor environment. And so it's like I'm breaking even on my efforts. Whereas if I went out into nature, I know I would, you know, I would get a surplus of life with my body. I would get a surplus of energy. I would just be feeling way better. If I did everything that I'm doing right now in nature, it's like I would probably become superhuman. Whereas like right now, it feels like I'm just breaking even.
Man, we talked, I don't know, a couple days ago on the phone, but you and I are in that same place, man. I'm, you know, secret out. I'm hunting some land for something, you know, similar. And, you know, shit, if Dr. Jack Cruz is right, we're both right then, moving out to the light away from it, you know. And I thought the other day, too, I was pulling into downtown Orlando, which isn't a big city, but pulling into it, I thought, you know, the image that people are coming up with is the idea, right, that you go to college, you get the degree, maybe you fall in love and you buy the little downtown cottage right off the thing, right? Whatever your fancy is. And, you know, you got your strollers downtown, all these odd biking strollers and shit, right? You see people living the life, right, that you're supposed to be living. A lot of those people living that green life too, right? But I thought, well, where's the food being made that's around here that you're going to get? Where's it come in from? You know, you think about that, and you mentioned the cities being sustainable, right? And I believe somebody, have to fact check me, but I believe there is this flock of generations to moving to cities, right? Suburbs also become hard to sustain too, because they're away from, you know, energy sources, et cetera. So not that I'm on board for anyone. I'm just pointing out shit that I've heard.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's like my difficulty with moving into the suburbs or a small town as being a Mexican in the United States is like, it's funny. I was driving every time I'm thinking, you know, I want to move into a small town and blah, blah, blah. And then I'll be driving and then you'll see those big Trump signs everywhere when you go into a small town.
It's true though, man. It's weird. But look, you don't do that. You'll freak out. I'm freaking out. Because every day, if you're at home at the right time on Sunday between 10 a.m. and 11, what you'll hear is a bunch of lawnmowers like start up like it's the fucking box fourth and the window comes. And it's like then the guy with his big badass John Deere starts it up. That's the whole thing. It's like and everybody's just fucking out there doing their fucking patterns. You know what I mean? Every day. And I'm telling you, man. Well, that's that lawn thing again. It fucks with me. It's like you cut the lawn and then it's going to grow back and then you put stuff on it to make it grow better and you cut it again next week. You're going to keep repeating that process.
Left field. Get some gravel pretty much. I think you'd be better off just getting some fucking gravel and doing that. But
they do that in like deserts and islands, man. Like when I lived on Marco Island, I thought it was great because the water costs a lot more money and the shortage, you know, people just kind of were, you know, throughout the yard part and they kind of rocked it up with palm trees and stuff like that. It looked nice. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. That to me makes way more sense than continually just feeding this fucking grass over and over. And it's the fucked up part is people don't even use the grass. Like you can use that to ground yourself and all that. And they just like, oh, it's just a lawn to look at. It's like, you don't even use a damn thing. Like, why do you even need grass?
I'm going to go further where it gets crazy. All right. Everyone has been a part of this. I'm the guy, I'm sitting out front or out back. Right. And the dog shits in the yard and they start to pick it up with a plastic bag. And I go, stop. And they're like, what? And I go, don't. It's way more unnatural for you to pick up a natural fertilizer in a plastic bag and put it in a trash can. I'm like, just leave it, because then when the lawn's mowed, it'll spread it everywhere and it'll help grow it. You know, so I don't know. It's one of those odd things for me that, look, you're an asshole in this community, man. Look, people take pictures of you with your dog or whatever, and they send out these bulletins. Like, I haven't been on camera or anything, but I get pictures. And they post them of stop your dog from pooping in the yard, et cetera. And I don't know. Why is that fucking crazy to me? And you mentioned like the usual.
Well, it just comes down to this. It's like, are you going to end up stepping in the shit or smelling it? I think that's kind of like where people see it. But it's
sure. I get it. Look, if your dog's
sterilization, that's just the problem.
If your dog's dropping off horse bombs or something, okay, maybe rake it around. I don't know. Do something, I guess, or let it shit in your side. I don't know. But it's just odd to me that we pick up a natural fertilizer and a non-biodegradable thing and put it in the trash can. I don't know. Blows my mind.
No, that makes sense, actually. I mean, I do it for my dog all the time, but I mean, I just do it. It's one of the, I've kind of come to realize that most of what we do as people is to not hurt other people's feelings or to make other people upset. And so I think people just do it because they don't want to upset anybody else, or they don't want to look like an idiot themselves. So I think that's really, at the end of the day, it's like any other behavior that we have a fear of people, you know, being displeased with our behavior, so you adjust for the sake of not having to, you know, deal with like the ramifications of becoming ostracized or something like that. So for me, when I pick up the dog shit, it just comes down to, okay, like I have to pick this up, because if I don't, then I'm going to become ostracized. But I mean, yeah, it's just complicated, because I wouldn't want to step in dog shit. So it's like, I wouldn't, you know, so I get that. But it's like, if it's a person, it's a personal yard or something like that. I mean, I don't know. I guess that makes sense. But I don't know. If you put it in the lawnmower, it's going to start spreading all the shit all over the place. So you're going to have shit everywhere, bro. The shit's going to hit the fan. So it's like, at that point, I don't know.
I'm not saying it's a solution, all right? I'm just the point being, motherfucker, when's the last time you were actually in your fucking yard? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, of course. People don't even, again, they just have it there as a, it's almost like a status symbol with the neighbors. At least where I was from, I grew up in a small town, and you know, how nice your yard was a determinant of how, I guess, how affluent we were. I don't know. People were, and then you have the, it's going to be coming here pretty soon. You're going to have the people with the Christmas lights. Like, that's another thing where it's just like, fucking A. Like, I'm just, The older I get, the more I become educated.
They're already up. There's like 7 houses on the way into my subdivision. They're already up, man.
It's like, let's just give you some more light pollution and just fucking and just make and let's just completely destroy your circadian rhythm. You know, one thing that I love about the winter, especially up here in the Pacific.
Hey, I want to ask Jack about that. Like, if you go all National Lampoon Christmas Vacation on your house, right? If your entire domicile where you live is covered in fucking electrical lights and plugins, what that could possibly do?
Yep, I mean, I'm sure it's not good things, but yeah, I mean. Oddly enough, why do people do that? People do that for the sake of social acceptance. It's just our culture is so far gone that it's like, you know, you're bound to find people eliciting certain types of behaviors that make no sense. But in the realm of cultural indoctrination, it's like it makes all the sense in the world. So it's like whether that's picking up shit, you know, trick or treating, whatever that maybe trick or treating high fructose corn syrup crap.
They're still picking up shit. They're just going to the door to get it.
Pretty much. Exactly. That's exactly what the fuck it is. But yeah, man, it's, I don't know. The more I educate myself about culture, the more I want to get the fuck away from it myself, man. I'm kind of at that stage in my life. And I'm just trying to figure that out ultimately right now, what my exit strategy is going to be from this, as Sideshow Bob said, this urine soaked hellhole, which is fucking, off on the Simpsons.
Well, look, man, damn, it's weird. We kind of wind up in the same place, you know, because I've been talking about exit strategies for certain things. And, you know, it's weird when you climb in it as far up as you have gone and the little up I have, even just being that far, the deeper you get in. That's why I was singing that song before the Tribal Seed song, where I was just like, look, it feels like people's minds are too far gone. Right. It feels like I posted on the Tribe of Change specifically, you know, that it was a gravity problem almost. You know what I mean? And it, like I think I said before on a podcast, some days you get up, it feels like, all right, I'm going to get up and I'm going to swing like a motherfucker and I'm barely going to budge a fucking thing. You know what I mean? And repeating that process each day, you know, and doing it because you know, care about waking other people up, care about, you know, the future, et cetera, for what have you, other reasons. I'm just naming some, but you know, when you talk about the exit strategy, you know, it's, I know that one, it's going to scare the shit out of a lot of fucking people listening right now.
Well, the problem is in terms of, looking at like exit strategies is, you can't exit anything. I think, you can't escape anything because whether Hillary or Trump or whoever the hell that is, if anything ends up happening with nuclear bombs, it doesn't matter where you are on the planet, you're going to get some of that nuclear fallout. So there is no escape. So at some point we have to ultimately conclude that we all got to do our part in trying to get people woke to wake them the fuck up a little bit in terms of what's actually going on. Because people, when they say that whole notion of people being asleep, it's absolutely true. And it's just, we all have to do our part in doing that every day. And even if it's a small punch, whatever it may be, it's still a punch. And that's at the end of the day, and it's cumulative. Like what I've kind of learned myself being online is that you're sharpening your skills. Like many people have asked me why I argue, why I spent so much time getting online debating people. It's made me better at arguing. It's made me better at confronting people and their rebuttals because I have practiced like crazy. So let's say if I have to go speak to an influential figure or somebody that is of influence, I can trap them. And I've done this with many fitness industry leaders where, you know, we'd have a kind of like a back and forth. They would call me out. I would then go on their platform and start just breaking off a bunch of concepts that I know they would not have any idea of which I'm talking about that hold a great importance, and it would force them to have to delete me and block me off of their page. Well, the reason I was able to debate that was because I was debating all their followers who were pretty much just repeating their dogma. And so I think for people, I think waking up in the morning every day and saying, you know what, I'm going to fight, I don't think any effort goes wasted. I think if you continually push this boundary of telling people, you know what, just think, use your fucking brain, even just go through the process. Like for me, it's like even on the Tribe of Change, you see me get in there at some times, and pretty much everybody's just giving their perspective on things. Everybody's giving a perspective. My perspective is that I've from the reptilian civilizations to the Illuminati's to all this shit, I've ultimately come down. What it's come down to for me is that unless you advance technology to a point that everything becomes very cheap and very efficient, it's going to be almost impossible to change society anyway. But it's like still making making children consciously aware of what's happening is going to make them less inclined towards wanting to get a job they don't really want to do. It's going to make them less inclined towards being a millionaire fucking sociopath. All these things contribute. And the whole thing is the more that people start judging each other for these types of things and not so much for picking up dog shit off the ground, the faster we're going to get to this. And then we don't have to think about an exit strategy, because that's my concern. I don't want to have an exit strategy, man. You get what I'm saying?
I do. You know, they say, you know, the internet is what connects everybody and allows that change to happen, that revolution or whatever, these even small factions, et cetera, to be heard. But, you know, connecting everyone like that, a couple things you said are true. You know, kids are more aware with more competence like that. They don't follow the system, right? They back out of doing that, but they also kind of become lost in what, you know, that direction is. And in any way, and for me, I think, I don't know about you, but sometimes I see the internet as almost a, whether it's a true image or a reflection of, you know, the veins of society, really. Sometimes I see it as that. And we see the internet as this ugly place, an open place, and where we exchange ideas, et cetera. But I see it almost as a true reflection of society, wherever you're reading. And I know they can gear what you see by what you like. But for me, I'm almost standing in the internet like some little fucking kid, dude, just like looking around. Like some days I'm like, oh my God, you know, and some days I'm like, oh shit. And some days, you know what I mean? I'm still kind of hypnotized by that whole of even maybe I'm hypnotized or almost awful, disgusted sometimes by what I see as a reflection of what we've done, or a collaboration of us or something, you know?
Yeah. It's just like, I think it varies, man, because some days you'll see people, it's like I'll go on my Facebook and I'll see just a bunch of just crazy fucking, it's so variable because like people are at different phases of their life. And I kind of come to realize that we're all on certain stages of where we're at, you know, and sometimes you'll catch people in a, like I would find, somebody, let's say people caught me in a stage like a few years ago where I was just, I mean, rambunctious, wanting to get the attention of the fitness industry and, you know, making people angry, because that was my goal, is to get them angry so they would actually look at me. And at that stage, I was seen as very repulsive to people. I would go in there and, you know, people would get in and be like, man, you know, you should tone it down and blah, 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 blah. But people wouldn't pay attention to me. They would intentionally avoid me. So at that point, I kind of had to become this monster to get people's attention. And now I'm much more mild-mannered than what I was before, because now it's not so necessary. Now I kind of get people's attention. I don't have to become so much of an antagonist when it comes to what I'm doing. But at that given moment,
a mental trainer that you can call anytime, you know.
What's that?
I said it helps when you have a mental trainer you can call anytime.
Yeah, of course. But yeah. but it's like when let's say I'm in a different stage in my life, so I'm much more pleasant to be around for most people. Like I'm not to where, whereas before everybody was like, fuck you, but now people are starting to accept what's going on. They're starting to accept the situation. They're starting to understand, you know, I've been doing the Olympic lifts, all that. What I've foretold has happened, and now people are starting to learn. So now I don't have to do this. But at a certain point in life, I'm sure I probably set off the anxiety of many people and just said that people, I'm sure I probably ruined a lot of people's days with some of the shit that I said before. But that was just my phase in my life. I'm sure now in the phase of my life where I'm at right now, I'm just getting people to think ultimately. So I think you catch people in stages, and in some stages they're going to be more unpleasant. And some stages are going to be more pleasant relative to your values and shit. So for me, a big thing that used to annoy the hell out of me was every time I would get somebody that would add me as a friend on Facebook, or let's say they would take one of my courses, I would tell them the implications of, you know, longitudinal compressions, things like that. And then they would go right back. I would see they would do what I do maybe for a day or two, post a before and after their posture. And then next week it's almost like they would be like, okay, this is too hard. I'm going to go back to what I do already. And then they do the Olympic lifting once again. Where it's like, for me, that was kind of a trigger that I would constantly have for myself on a regular basis. And that's what would trigger me to fight. Now I don't really see that anymore. And now everything kind of tends to change at least everything's kind of changed for myself, which I found to be kind of interesting, because I can't remember the last time I've seen a deadlift, a back squat, or a power clean, and anybody trying to show that off online anymore. Like in terms of my friends list, in terms of everywhere that's in my immediate surroundings, I haven't found anything like that. So I think a lot of times but fortunately it's all worked out like that for me. I can't imagine what it would be like, but even let me throw that aside. But then when you put up a post last night about Julian Assange being killed or somebody close to him being killed, I'm just like, fuck, you know, you go right back to that. So, you know, it's like, it's so variable. It's hard to maintain sanity in a world that's just like tugging you in so many different directions. You know, one day can be so good because all these good things happen. And the next day, you know, you see a post online about the president from the Philippines wanted to join with China and then China joining with Russia. And you're just like, oh God, here comes World War III. Fuck. It's like, here goes all the work. Here goes everything. And it's all because some greedy pieces of shit want to collude to essentially just take over the planet. And so at a certain stage, you just gotta, it's very, pretty much what I'm just saying here is it's just really difficult to find any kind of emotional balance when you have so much shit just being thrown around your way. It's almost like, that's kind of what I almost think about. You know what? I want to make an exit strategy. But then when you also think about like, look, if you stop trying to change the world around you, it's going to fuck you anyway. You're going to be fucked either way. So it's like, you might as well start spreading relevance any way that you can. That's I think that's the only thing that we can do. Any way that you can, whether that's bringing upon awareness of some corrupt governmental thing, showing that a fucking election fraud was happening, whatever it may be. It's like, as long as there's something like that being put forth for us to distrust this current culture, it's going to slowly push us in the direction of more functionality as a species. The only problem that I have, man, is that it takes a lot for people to finally start doing something about it. So like, if you look at Venezuela, you know, they're finally fighting back now, but I mean, what kind of living conditions did they have before they started fighting back? And as I see here in the US, I don't think we're anywhere near in terms of having the living conditions for us to really want to fight back and say, yeah, you know, we're getting fucked. So I'm just wondering what the turning point is going to be for people, if eventually somebody's going to have to drop a nuke until we finally say, okay, you know, we need to turn this shit around. Like we need to take action now. Cause from what I see right now, it's hard. My goal with functional patterns, man, has been that rather than people validating each other for their six packs or their biceps or their nice car or their nice house, that we value each other for the amount of sustainability we can give one another in terms of concepts, right? So let's say, for instance, if I have a person that's like, I was looking for different things that help me with frequencies and whatnot. So I hit up a few people privately, they end up giving me information. And because of that, I value that. I have great value for the information that they give me. And that to me is much more valuable than if that person was a billionaire or trillionaire or whatever it may be, because it gave me worthwhile value that's going to make me healthy. And that's essentially the kind of culture that I'm trying to create, at least with functional patterns, is that we value each other for more relevant reasons, that it's an external validation oriented system. But the external, the way that you seek external validation is more based upon your willingness to be functional in every facet of your life. Whereas right now, it's almost like if you look at our current culture, it's the more dysfunctional you are, the more self-destructive you are, the more that you push self-destruction on with other people, the more you become loved, the more you become glamorized. And that's kind of that's been my concern, is it's how do you make people fit in to a new paradigm? How do you make people fit in within this new paradigm? And I'm slowly finding that it's starting to work. But at some point or the other, people have to lose faith in the current system. So like what you're doing over here with the Cognitive Rampage, the Tribe of Change, it's absolutely pivotal, because if systems like that didn't exist, people wouldn't be open to taking on something that's not scientifically tested, or as we were going to discuss earlier, somebody taking on information from somebody who has no credentials, who has no credential background. So it's system. I mean, I see what's going on in the Tribe of Change. I see all that shit. It's great, because these are all forms of dialogue that people stand to gain from. All these perspectives are things that people stand to measure. And if I go on the Tribe of Change, it's like, sure, there's things I don't agree with. And I'm sure everybody can say the same thing about me, that there's plenty of things that we don't agree with one another. But with that said, we're still gathering perspective on shit that's important. It's people trying to solve the human condition, and everybody's kind of putting forth their opinions. And like, you know, one guy's talking about how global warming is a legit, then somebody's saying that it's not, but there's variables there where I'm like, okay, if what this guy is saying is true and these variables are true, fuck, I need to reevaluate what I'm saying. You know, like I have to reevaluate what I'm putting forth, you know? So it's, at the end of the day, I think as people make putting forth the effort to show that we don't trust this system anymore, I think that's slowly going to push us towards a better future.
Yeah, you know, I'll steal from George. I said George. I almost said George Carlin. That's funny. Dan Carlin. You could steal from him here too. But you know, Dan Carlin's latest podcast that came out, I enjoyed thoroughly, where he talked about being more of a radical. And he said, before he brought up that term, which everyone's scared of, was the idea that, do you have faith that the system that's in place can fix the system itself, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't particularly have faith that the system itself will fix what's broken in the system that it is. You know what I mean? So if you
believe that,
then how do we change that? So for him, basing that in being a radical, you know what I mean, and believing something different. And, you know, you're speaking to also a lot of things on the tribe too, where, you know, what do we do? And I posted that other private video about, you know, affecting the change around you, you know, and functional patterns is a large wavelength that's, you know, that touches the globe right now. I mean, you just got back from that tour. So it's being able to affect the environment around you with the change, with the growth, with that paradigm shift, and hope for the evolution over time. You know, we see results on almost a negative end, right? To where the issue is I think the younger generation sees and is aware of all the issues here and have become apathetic toward it, right? And then mm-hmm. have bitter, resentful baby boomers now taking over, even though they're the ones that allowed it to happen, that almost toppled it in the beginning, but then allowed it to happen. And so you having this resentment, bitterness, looking down toward a generation that's looking up going, you know, I'm apathetic. You fucked us. Like, you know what I mean? You know what I mean?
Yep.
Get a job, go to college. What the fuck is, you know what I mean? So
absolutely.
These two generations, again, the duality of everything is what you see fighting. And I think that reflects in the politics, the selections that we have, even the choices in fitness. You could break it down to the duality, right? Of what do you believe in more? Is it being fit or being big and strong, right? You see this. And so what FP is that paradigm breakaway from, it's not about being fit, lean, and healthy, or big, strong, and athletic. It's a paradigm shift. And by planting seeds in locations like you have, I think that philosophical evolution, you know, starts to grow slowly. And I
hopefully.
Think hopefully. Yeah, we can hope, right? That's an evolutionary change that hopefully matches or catches up with. And, you know, there's one thing I do know about fish, and I would call politicians and all that tuna, is the closer the fish comes to you and the bigger the fish, the closer the fish comes to you and seeing you, the harder that fish begins to fight and will fight without cause of its own peril. So if it has to flop itself into the engines or the props or back into the water with the sharks to get away from you, it'll do so. So what I'm seeing is that big fish, the politics, the corruption, which is the foundation seat of all of it, getting closer to the boat, you know, getting closer to the hand of the people that's got it speared. And I, so you're seeing the thrashing almost as if it doesn't care about its own peril, the emails, the strikes, the people missing, the misinformation, right? But when you're seeing this, I don't know, I feel like that fish is getting closer to the boat. You know what I mean?
Well, what I think is fascinating, bro, is clearly, and I don't know, I think we're probably, politically speaking, probably along the same lines. I like Bernie Sanders. I like the message he was promoting. I think it was the fact that he was saying that we needed a radical, literally a revolution, I think was awesome. And what I think is most hopeful in that is that most people between the ages of, like, I believe 18 to 45 were voting for him. The majority were voting for him between that age range. So it's everybody pretty much around, I think it was like 45 or 43 and up, were the people that were not voting, that were either voting for Hillary or Trump. So it's all really just older people. So it's like a
divide, that bitterness looked down and that apathetic, oh yeah, we'll revolt the whole thing. You know what I mean? So you, that's what you got, man.
But I think what's awesome, bro, is going back to the whole choices of fitness, I think CrossFit, I think yoga, I think all these, this touch butt shit going around, I think it's a blessing. As much as I was like, you know what, this is going to just, huh?
Fucking shit, touch. I don't know why that shit makes me laugh.
But it Ido Portal method. We'll just put it that way. Ido Portal or some of the MoveNet shit. I'll do. That's what I determine as touch butt. But anyway, the way I see it is that the more people partake in these behaviors, which are, you know, trusted by the establishment, the sooner people are going to break down, and they're going to have to ultimately come, they're going to have to smell the roses. So yes, CrossFit Kids right now has 1,000 affiliates, I believe, in the United States in schools. It's in 1,000 different schools. It has CrossFit Kids is in 1,800 different facilities on the planet worldwide. So CrossFit Kids, so children are doing CrossFit right now. And now all these children are going to suffer from injuries much younger than what they probably would have had they not had CrossFit. So their ability to learn things is actually going to become much, learn the consequences of stupid movement, of stupid exercise. That's going to become accelerated because, you know, these CrossFit facilities are engaging in these really unsustainable practices. And eventually that's going to lead them to something like functional pattern, or eventually that's going to lead them to like, why am I having to take these drugs at age 17 or 18? Why am I addicted to painkillers at, you know, 19, 20 years old after, you know, suffering a damn rotator cuff injury or a lumbar spine issue or something? I think when they eventually that youth is going to say, okay, I did this CrossFit and it clearly hurt me. Now I have these alternatives available to me. I think all these, at the end of the day, the system is going to collapse on its own anyway. So since it's not working, it's going to kill more people. Since people are going to take more medication.
It's the fish, right? It's going to collapse on itself like the banks did in 2008. You know what I mean? They fucking collapsed on each other is what they did.
Of course. And I think people are going to feel the fail. They're going to experience the failure firsthand. And when they experience that failure firsthand, they're going to be more open to when you and I are saying the things that we are, and they're going to tend to be more inclined to want to transition. I don't think it's a matter of choice anymore. When people have to pay ridiculous deductibles at a hospital to cover their surgeries and their traumas and whatnot, eventually they can't afford that anymore. And they have to say, okay, I need to find an alternative solution because the system doesn't really give a shit about me and I need to go somewhere else. I believe that's what's happening right now. And
why the fluctuation of fitness? Well, we get the marketing side, right? But I mean, you and I could do a whole episode on the idea of selling the fitness, right? But what I mean is this emergence of healthy, sustainable living. Right. It seems as almost like the consciousness, almost, if there is one, almost knows that we have to start growing our own shit again because it's going to be scarce soon. Right. We have to start learning how to keep our bodies alive without gyms and medicines and you know, supplements, yes, et cetera. Right. Almost as you see I hate saying global consciousness because half of it's at fucking war. So it's not. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
like,
absolutely.
You know, so some sort of. I don't know. I like to look at, you know, if we're evolving somewhere between what we were and what we will be, you know, our generation, our species, our era, we're like the middle monkey. You know what I mean? We're just out of monkey. We're God knows where we're fucking headed. You know, not saying it's from monkey. You get what I mean?
Yeah, of course, of course.
But that middle era. And so many times I think when I'm trying to look into what we're doing, there's just so much happening in the evolutionary change of us, whether
it's probably just natural selection, right? That's what I think this is just a group of people is going to we're fortunate enough to have the right condition, the right kind of conditioning in their life to help them evaluate the circumstances being put forth in front of them. And because of that exposure to more relevant information, now they are capable of, you know, of reacting differently and reacting more intelligently. So they've survived their genes. I was talking in my class where, you know, there's going to be a mass die off. I mean, in nature, we had forms of stimulus that turned us into super organisms. Humans were super organisms at a certain point. We could stave off illness. We were competing against lions and shit like that in nature, packs of lions and wildebeests and all these things. We were competing with all these guys. Now, if you think of the stimulus that we've had in the last 100 years, especially from the industrial age, we've had no real good stimulus for ourselves. Our bodies have no stimulus in terms of actually physically challenging ourselves. Our physiology is completely dependent on things like antibiotics and medicines. I mean, we are a very, very genetically weak system now. So for myself, with the health woes that I've had in my life, I don't ever trust medicines. I don't really trust these types of things because I want my body to be able to find out how to deal with these problems without using any forms of medicine or substances, because ultimately that's how you had to do it in nature. You didn't have all the, sometimes you wouldn't have all the medicines and all this shit available. You had to find out how to keep your shit together. That, I think, through epigenetics is what keeps you alive, you know, what keeps you strong.
Oh, I so agree, man. And dude, the rate that parents give their kids antibiotics, like fucking M&Ms, man. I mean, they pump them in.
Unbelievable.
Shit, man. It's crazy. And when you're doing that, you almost sterilize your kid. You know what I mean? They got to live in a fucking bubble. They can't. And look, if they, I see it when I go to the beach sometimes, right? The kid walked from the car to the beach. And before that kid got his shirt off, mom has got this dude showering in SPF 4000. Yep. You know what I mean? And she's soaking that shit into him. And I'm like, let the boy get the fucking sun, man. Like, it's not going to kill him. Like, you know what I mean? The first 10 minutes or so, it's going to be all right. You know, then you build this minute up to where the kid can't be outside, right? Then long-term exposure later in life is a problem.
I think it comes down to the bar has been dropped so low in terms of what living actually even is. I mean, how many people are really even living in our culture anymore? Most of them are still, they're concerned about every little thing. People are like, oh, you got to wash your hands for every little thing. And you got to fucking shower every fucking day. And you have to shower twice a day for whatever reason. And of course, if you fucking stink, then of course you got to do that. But people are very, very sheltered. Like you're saying, they're in a bubble. And the problem, especially with modern medicine, is that the bar is. I read a book called The Cortisol Connection a while back. It was read it maybe like 7-8 years ago. And this guy was talking about how adrenal. Have you ever heard of adrenal fatigue?
Off cuff, possibly, but no.
Yes, I'm already telling you what it is. You already know what I'm talking about. It's just the adrenals are not keep producing cortisol because they're just tapped into too much throughout the day, or you're just flatlining on your cortisol. Well, anyway, what they talk about is that the modern medicine does not accept the term adrenal, because for them to think that you have an adrenal dysfunction means that you're dead, that your body is not producing any adrenaline or is not producing any cortisol. Their idea of dysfunctional physiology in that regard to your is producing no cortisol in your. That's their idea of it. They can't assume that, okay, you have some kind of a dysfunction going on. And it's the same thing goes with biomechanics training in general, is that people like even with physical therapists, most of them aren't even looking at movement. They don't even give a shit. When they run assessments on people, it's through some kind of a static. A lot of time they just move a shoulder a particular way, and then they move it another way. They say, okay, well, this is your infraspinatus, and this one's the one dealing with the issue. Not considering, you know, there could be connectivity to the diaphragm and all these other areas. But I think the bar has been dropped so fucking low that it's hard for people to it's hard for people to imagine what a healthy human being is, because we have so many crutches in our culture. You have to wear a sweater when it's cold. You have to take this medicine whenever you get sick, rather than just saying, you know what, I need a regular way, or I just need to be out in the cold and just toughen the fuck up.
Yeah, I mean,
it's a big problem.
For me, when I dropped to the as minimalist I could get to lifestyle, right? I mean, as much shit as I probably own is about this shit right here. You know what I mean? That's it. You know what I mean? Fuck the foam. You know what I mean? Fuck the table. Fuck the foam. This shit fits in one suitcase right here. You know what I mean? But for the most part,
foam makes your shit and your audio come out dope, though, I gotta say.
Oh man, it's nice and quiet in here too.
Right?
Yeah, there's a few good things for that. But yeah. And when I was going through and kind of cutting down to it, it wasn't like this process, right? It wasn't like I came home and said, all right, I am this, right? I slowly just over time would chuck shit out and not replace it. You know what I mean? And the more I kind of went through it, the more you start to realize how many material things that we allow into our lives become a part of our routine, creating distractions from a life, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? So as I was getting rid of stuff, I used to think, how many times did I go through that? You know, how many times did I pick that box up and put it somewhere and pay for the space where it was sitting, right? How many times did I, you know, and as I cut through all that, I just, I looked and I was questioning my routines, my behaviors, the whys. Why keep that? Why? And as I saw, a lot of these things are attached to some sort of, all right, you ready for this shit? We're going to go on a whole nother level.
That, okay.
Some sort of, I did not plan for this. This was not the ending when I started out talking about this. And like some sort of holding on to a memory of immortality, right? Like this memory that will last forever because I have the baseball. You know what I mean? Because I have the picture, they'll remember me when I'm here, you know? And I yep. thought, but the memories in my head, it was weird, man. So I mean, the minimalist thing seems superficial and surface because it seems and appears to be trendy these days, you know? And, but when you really go through that process, which I turned it into one, I'm sure there's people that just say, fuck it. But as I went through that, it really helped me notice some of the plugins that I thought were me defined my story that were really attached to some material memory. You know what I mean? It's fucking, I know it's not.
Yeah, just holding on to the past, ultimately. No, I mean, about, what was it? I think it was about 9 years ago. Maybe about 8 years ago. I had a bunch of shit. Like, I was starting to accumulate things living in San Diego. Business was going decent, and I started kind of buying things. I had a bunch of clothes. And then at one point in my life, I'm like, God, I got to just drag all this shit around me everywhere I go, this stuff. I just got, like, George Carlin would talk about stuff. I have all this stuff everywhere, and what the hell do I need it for? So one day I had moved – where did I move? I think I had moved down to downtown San Diego. It may have been then. No, I moved from one apartment in a neighborhood to another. No, I didn't move to downtown. Sorry, I didn't move downtown. So I wound up moving downtown. And that day I got rid of about 90% of everything that I owned. Even things that I'm like, I never thought I would get rid of that. I was like, you know what? These possessions are inhibiting you from growing. You need to minimize everything that you own if you expect to want to grow again or if you expect to want to rebuild yourself. You got all this shit. You get to get rid of it. I even had some extra guitars that I didn't want. I gave it away. I didn't even sell it. I just gave all this shit away. I said, I don't want to have this anymore. I'm just done. I put it on Craigslist. Somebody went, came up, took it in a truck, and just bounced. And I got rid of everything. From that point, I learned a valuable lesson. Now I have a bunch of you know what? I don't have a bunch of shit again. I just wound up giving a bunch of stuff away that I bought. I gave it away back on Craigslist, and now I don't really have very much. Like if you look at my apartment, I got that computer there, but there's no couch in here. We have this bed here for somebody if they need to crash out. That's on the floor. This is our living room. In my room, we have a mattress on the floor, and then we have a big, like what the hell is it? It's like one of those, like shelvings or whatever that you see at Costco. It's kind of one of those that I have inside my room, and that's where I put my clothes. So it's like I don't really have. I think what I'm going to bring this up, Adam, because I think this is a value. Let me bring this up. You're probably like, oh God, here we fucking go. I don't think people understand that we are living in the lap of luxury already.
Yeah.
If you have a faucet running water in it, like, dude, I would have to go walk not to the Puget Sound where I'm at. I would have to find a freshwater place. I think it's over there. I think it would happen to be, I think Lake Union. I would have to go there. I would have to walk at least 2 miles to go get water if I wanted to go get water, right? If I wanted to have hot water, I would have to set up a fire, create some kind of a pot-like thing that wouldn't be metal. I would have to do something to heat that water up so I could then warm my body or actually shower myself or bathe myself with this warm water. So I have water right there on my faucet. And if I want to make it hot, all I have to do is just turn this hot water thing and I get hot water. I don't understand how people don't see this as a luxury. It is an extreme luxury. I go take a shit in my toilet. I go drop a deuce over there and I flush it right down. Sure, there's a temporary smell afterwards if I maybe ate something that wasn't supposed to be there, but I flush that down, turn the fan on, which fans all the air out, and now I don't have to worry about having fecal matter that I'm going to step in. That's a luxury. I have light inside of my apartment. If it's really, really cold outside, I can turn on a heater. Everybody, like most people on the planet, or most, at least in the developed nations, have these luxuries already present. But somehow we miscommunicated that, thinking by us getting a gold watch, a gold chain, or whatever, a chrome grill, or a car that has exceptional paint on it or something, that somehow now that's become luxury. But my God, we have a bed. I mean, we have internet. We have a computer that gives you access to everything. And it doesn't even cost very much money to have a computer anymore. So the fucked up part is, man, is that we're already living in the lap of luxury and we don't even recognize it. For me, I recognized this a long time ago. I'm like, man, you know, I got all this cool shit. I got a shower. I mean, a bath. I mean, goddamn, like, what else do I want? What else do I want, Adam?
They can't sell you that as a lap of luxury because then there's no need to go to work to gain more, to buy more shit. You know what I mean?
Of course. It's slavery. Yeah, like, it's fucking straight slavery.
Yeah, you can't do that. I mean, you can't, just because you have light, water, and food, shelter, and a soft bed, safety, and a TV, and the internet, that's, you know, and you can call fucking Australia right now if you want to. I mean, you know, forget that. You need more. You need servants. You know what I mean? You need a plane. You have, look, you need two properties, because a proper investment for retirement means that you've at least flipped two properties so your 401k and Roth account can grow. You know what I mean? Like, that's what the
fuck. Oh my God. I can't believe we get duped into this shit, bro. Fuck, man.
Well, hey, look, but it's all tied in by a pretty bow, though, man, that feels close, which is the idea of, look, to have a family, that's kind of the angle. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's tied into that notion that if you want to...
I think you're pushed into this, like that Dave Chappelle bit where he's talking on one of his stand-up, where, why do men buy nice cars?
Because
women like nice cars.
Yeah, or they want to feel 16 again, or they like driving fast. Some people just like driving, though.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like, he's like women like fast cars. He's like, if a man could fuck a woman in a cardboard box, then he wouldn't care to buy a car. He wouldn't give a shit, because at the end of the day, most men really just want to get laid. I think that's oftentimes what it comes. I think if you have all the necessities taken care of in life, this is my personal theory, I think the next thing on the list is going to be your other primal mechanism as an organism, which is, how do you duplicate?
Well,
like, how do you duplicate yourself? You know, so I think sex becomes a very, very big, a very prevalent thing in our behavior after that. You know,
it is, man. You sparked some of this whole car thing. I remember I was driving to a surgeon's parking lot, right? And you can expect what to see, right, in Dr. So and So's lanes and shit. And it's usually a decent car show. You know what I mean? So anyway, I park and there's like, I don't know, Ford Fusion, a Camry, all 4 years old. And then there was this red 2016 fucking Batmobile vet thing. And it was not in a doctor's spot, but next to it. And I pointed out the car that was nice. They said, oh yeah, that's this nurse practitioner that's here. Oh, she's a bit crazy, you know? And then I thought about the ones making the money there, those neurosurgeons, right? The ones you would expect to be in that car, or plastic surgeons, whatever. And they weren't. It was living this more humbled place, you know, not the watch, not the race car. You know what I mean? Not doing that. And most people know that, invest their money right and live that way. No, you know, that's not what you do. You know what I mean? That's what the game sells you to do with any kind of money.
Adam, you wound up cutting out, bro. Can you repeat that, dude? Sorry.
Yeah, it was probably
It was like cutting in and out.
Yeah, fuck it. It was probably unimportant.
We're talking about the difference between a neural. No, I want to hear it. What the fuck was it?
Oh, all right. I was thinking my mother-in-law. Must have been a lie. No, there was a surgeon place. Long story short, I expected to see a bunch of nice cars parked in the doctors and physicians parking spots, and there was not. There was a very fancy car, you know, souped up race car looking, you know, Batmobile thing.
But that was a nurse practitioner's.
It was a nurse's car, right? And all the doctors essentially had like a 3-year-old Camry, a 4-year-old Fusion. You know what I mean? It was all even like that. And then I kind of led into talking about the people that actually have money understand that's really what you do with it, right? It's not buying the race car. And I don't know, you were talking about cars and shit, and for some reason that shit came to mind.
Well, it's just like people, I think a great difficulty for us, and I've probably said this on other podcasts, is being able to visualize what a reality is when you've attained what you, like so much of my life, Adam, was based upon my denial that I couldn't bang every chick that I could see. Like, so much of my cognition, I was like, do I really feel that way about certain things? Do I really feel that way about that woman? Or do I really feel this way about my life? Or do I only feel this way because I am not able to bang 20, 30 different chicks? Is it because that I'm not busy having sex that I really feel this discontent with society? Is that really what my problem is? Am I just a person that's so strung up on his own insecurities and is this my problem? Is this really what the issue is?
That's what anyone in the crowd would tell you that's in the crowd doing so would do, right? What would your mother tell you if everyone jumps off the bridge, right? So everyone at the bottom of the bridge is going to tell you, jump the fuck off, right? So you're weird if you don't. So, and that's your problem. You're not like the rest of us, et cetera.
Yeah, it's just the problem was, like, I wanted to say, okay, well, let me make sure. I'm going to go out and I'm going to hoard around for a while. I'm going to go to clubs, try and find out what makes a woman tick, what's going to make her behave a certain way, what makes men tick in a particular way, how to become a leader, all this bullshit, how to speak better, how to become better with my nonverbal communication, knowing how to project dominance, alpha behavior. I went out and I did all this stuff and I had marginal success. I wasn't like a big time pimp or anything, but I found some success at a certain point, and then I started hanging out with these people where, you know, they were sociopaths. They were rich kids who had everything kind of handed to them. And I started hanging out with them. And I was at that point, it's kind of when I realized, no, you know, I do have a disconnect with society. I do this problem is here. And I think everybody to some degree or the other kind of has this in their mind where they're like, you know what, if I just had money, maybe I wouldn't be so negative. Maybe I wouldn't look at society in such a poor way. If I just had more things, if I had more stuff, maybe I wouldn't look at things the way that I do. So just to be safe, let me make all this money. Let me buy all this stuff that I probably don't need. Let me consume whatever I can just to be safe. And just do that. And what I tend to find from the people that I've met in my life, and I've gotten to meet a lot of people in my life who actually were very successful, and then they decided to say, you know what, there really wasn't anything on the other side that was really particularly that great. Like what I've learned for myself, it's sometimes you have to go through that route to learn that there's not really anything that worth a shit on the other side. You know what? Like for me, I've achieved what most people would deem as financial success. Like I've made the money and whatnot. But yeah. Once you get on the other side, like I think I told you in one podcast, like, man, shit's really hard when you get on this side. You have to organize 1,000 different things and it's just not worth it. And what I would tell most people is don't go to this side. Don't do that. And I can only say that from my experience. But a lot of times for people, they almost still feel like that. Well, you know what? Maybe I'm in denial, so maybe I need to go do that. And that, I think that's one of the flaws with the human species itself, is that we need to experience things before we can really understand them oftentimes. And that's one of the fundamental issues that we have. So like I could tell somebody to not do CrossFit and give them a million reasons to do it, but sometimes they just have to go do it, get hurt before they actually listen, you know?
Well, there's two things, though, that we value, which is being able to measure and social acceptance. And so stuff, even experience, becomes measures of something, whether it's growth, success, experience, a life lived, whatnot. So I think, you know, in a very rat in a maze sort of way and pigeon in the light bulb, we still respond to those very basic notions. You know what I mean?
Hey, Adam, how much have you traveled in your life? Have you traveled a lot or not?
I've been to enough places to where I can tell you that every place has a McDonald's. I can tell you for the most part, there's traffic issues everywhere. There's assholes everywhere. There's good and bad food everywhere. There's broke as shit. And really, I used to, years ago when I came back from hanging out in Belize and Dan Griega, he would say, look, you don't know the ghetto. You know what I mean? Like real ghetto. You know what I mean? When you're somewhere in the Caribbean or Central America, I mean, you're talking real ghetto stuff, you know, and when you correlate to ghettos that we think over here, you know, enough to correlate, you know, every place remotely, it kind of comes the same, has its good, has its bad. I don't know.
It's funny. I've come to pretty much the exact same conclusion, but I couldn't determine that, Adam, until I traveled and I saw it. But it sucks that people have to do that, because so many people are like, man, that's so cool. You get to travel. You get to go to Australia.
It's what they sell you now. Now, those that have bought out of buying stuff, they now sell you the experience, right? So now your life is nothing unless you have traveled on a cruise through Canada up into the Alaskan Wild, right? You know, Viking Cruise Line, you know, unless you've done, unless you got Instagram to prove that you fucking did shit, Well, then, you know what? Guess what that means? That means you have to still work to pay for that experience in their fashion, the way they describe it for you. I mean, college has become that now. They
absolutely
the experience, not the education. It's the same. It's the same idea, because some people do wake up. They wake up and go, holy shit, enough with the fucking garage sales. You know, I mean, I look, no hatred to my neighbors here, but I can't help but drive into the little fucking subdivision and I see people with their garages open. Motherfucker, it's so full of shit. It's just fucking stuff. You could raise a garage door like it was fucking the Storage Wars and shit. You know what I mean? You could raise it and bid on shit in this fucking, you know? And I'm driving through looking at all these garages just after another, just stacked full of God knows fucking what. And you're just like, fuck, just stuff. You know,
it's like that, the beginning of Zeitgeist moving forward. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
Now it all goes right back in the box, because that's where you all end up anyway. You end up fucking dead. Uh-huh. And what are you going to do with all that shit? It all goes right back into the box.
Hey, that's like, why you got to pick it up with a plastic bag from the yard and put it in the fucking trash can, man. You see why it's fucking insane to do that shit?
Oh, man, dog. Like,
literally?
It's crazy, bro. That's just what I deem as it's one of our limitations as humans, is that we rely so much on our own personal experience to figure things out. And oftentimes, most of the time when you think about it.
That's my downfall, dude.
No, it's all of our downfall. I think it's just so hard, man. It's so difficult to become wise in our culture. It's very difficult to become wise because so few people are wise. They kind of just repeat the same mistakes over and over again. There's no, I don't know, there's no learning in anything. Like I think I told you before, I recently started testing with marijuana, and people say that, you know, the CBDs are primarily the part that helps people the most with their chronic inflammation or whatever. I don't know if it's the CB. I think if you use the THC correctly, and I think if it's employed, if it's used well, it's almost as if, for me, like
we had to sneak the bill in somehow, bro.
The what?
We had to get them growing it somehow. So if we can make the, if
of course, you know, it's bullshit.
Hardcore conservatives and Democrats believe.
But I think the most beneficial aspect of this is the issue with drugs that I think that exists, is that people are using a hammer to screw nails into a door into the frame. They're trying to use hammers for that. I think everything in life, to some degree or the other, is going to be a tool, and it's a matter of how you use it. And I think nobody gives that kind of perspective on life. You know, one thing that I really like that – hold on. This is one thing I really like that you do, Adam, is you always talk about learning competence, becoming competent. I think if everybody pursued life with that perspective, the world would be we'd be living in a Venus Project or some kind of a utopia evolving society or something, because nobody's really concerned about just straight up just learning to be competent. That's never an issue. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, there's two principles in the book, man. Out of the three principles to change, man, the first is you got to have humility to be able to gain competence, right? So you practice humility to gain competence. But with competence is the second or the third principle, CCE. With competence comes a confidence that we can be enthusiastic about.
Absolutely.
And so it's not about discovering purpose or passion, because passion is fleeting. Passion becomes excitement, really, and it doesn't last. You have to feed that excitement and passion, competence, continually. And then with a state of confidence, you can then be enthusiastic. And what I explain in the book is that enthusiasm is truly the state of happiness, and enthusiasm, cultivating that through competence. But the difference is you seek competence by not waiting on experience, but creating experience, so then you can be confident through your own self-creations and then assimilate that knowledge better through your own experience. And generally, you don't have to move to enthusiasm, I say in the book too, because you may move toward, you know what, not my shit. But now you're confident in short-term pain that it's not yours, you tried it, not for me. Or long-term pain, you never even fucking tried it. So either way, you get confident. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's the whole thing. You're just that's what I think the fundamental problem is with modern culture in general, is that everybody's busy trying to hoard a bunch of material goods, but very few are trying to just establish real competence within themselves.
But it's so trademarking, right? They call it trademarking and intellectual property. So that's what they're selling anyway. How to make that thing, how to share that thing, how to grow that thing. You know what I mean? That's they are. They hoard the competence. Look, hackers online, and even look at the fitness industry. Everyone is out biohacking the fitness industry, trying to find that golden nugget that they can hoard as competence to make all the money off of it before they share it. You feel me?
Of course.
And
absolutely.
You're the only one to take a different approach that said, here's everything I can fucking possibly give you to where I can still fucking eat food. And you know what I mean? And make this way and make a paradigm shift. So that's truly, you know, my point is the gold nuggets of competence are out there. Most of it starts with you first knowing what you don't know and being humble enough to question it. But we do hoard it. We hold it
out of curiosity. What are books that are kind of went behind on the background of your book? Like what places did you extract? Who are the people that you get your shit from?
Oh, man, I quote them in the book, man, a few of them. I go as far deep back philosophically as Siri, into some Plato stuff as well, into some Marcus Aurelius stuff philosophically. And then from a psychological perspective, I had to tap into all of the greats because it's integrative. It's, it says cognitive rampage, but the truth is it's a thinking rampage as I'm asking all disciplines to question their own disciplines and work together. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's anywhere from behavioralists to, you know, Skinner, very deep into cognitive practitioners, rational emotive practitioners like Lazarus, Albert Ellis for sure, Beck definitely. Lazarus is one of the beginning guys who didn't get a lot of notoriety and shit.
What was he? Was he a behavioral scientist or?
He was a cognitive approach guy. He was deep into thought, thinking, perception, feel. Kind of the, like Ellis really would be dubbed the grandfather of cognitive, but he was rationally emotive, really being in the present, using the thinking to be rationally in the present. And Lazarus was kind of that spark of that, if you will. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That Aristotle to the Plato, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's Stoic philosophers all the way into real modern applications of research to... Now, what structural practitioners mean are doing today, what behavioralists are doing today, what cognitive, you know, people are doing today, and incorporate the biology, the epigenetics factor, the biological factor, all that in the beginning, because any change in fucking life or any optimization, it's all of that shit. And unfortunately, like in your fitness industry, when they say CrossFit's it, yoga's it, when they're not focusing on what is it, is using a full biomechanical or full bioinfluential method to help change psychology. It's not just behavior. It's not just cognitive. It's not, you know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. the full function of the human being. And we can't say that this works, this doesn't only, right?
Absolutely.
So it's for me, it was going wake up mental health industry, stop calling it integrative and only practicing it on three levels when you know it's a much broader base and most of your shit's subjective and is not based in anything real yet. So, damn, you put me in a fucking little ramp.
Well, I have another question because I'm just curious in terms of what your perspective is on it. What about like, let's say like Sigmund Freud or fucking Freud was good and what was bad? Like
Freud's based in, I don't care what any psychologist fucking says. If you operate on the conscious, subconscious level of any fashion, you know, you're dealing with Freud in some manner. For me, Freud gets laughed at. He got joked out of the industry when he wrote the Dream Book, really. And then addiction kind of takes over and it kind of went downhill. That's what people really want to remember now. But when he wrote the Dream Book, people kind of went, whoa, okay, left fucking field. You know what I mean? Now,
what do you mean? Like what the fuck was left field?
I got to remember the name of the book, but he came out. Dude, this book is like this fucking thick. Somebody out there is screaming it, but I don't remember it. And Steve's not here. Look it up. Anyway, he wrote that book, which kind of was dream interpretation, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of threw all the... his followers kind of left field, like, okay, Freud's done and went too far. But at the time, though, I look at him as kind of like a badass motherfucker because everyone kind of, before he really said what he said with some sexual references, et cetera, was like, look, you either had a demon in you, you had some fluid issues. You know what I mean? There were a few things out there. They had, you know, mental stuff back in the day. Don't get me wrong, but, you know, on a notoriety grand scale. And he came out and said, it's none of that. You want to fuck your mom. Like to say that at a time, holy shit, you think you got it rough, Nowdy? saying what you're saying.
Yeah, Jesus Christ.
You know what I mean? And so he kind of started that shit. And then people wonder why he writes a dream book. But and then Ellis for me was the other change guy, where Skinner, or not Skinner, but Rogers had come out with all this positive psychology, this client-centered focus, it's not your fault, disease model shit. And then he kind of went, Ellis is like, I don't give a fuck about what you feel. It's what you think right now and be rational, okay? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And for him to say that was kind of like what Freud said, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so there's those game changers that kind of come out and go, no. You know what I mean? And people, they look at them like they're fucking insane.
Yeah, but do his ideas carry relevance now?
Oh, hell yeah. Are you kidding? Ellis is, he's...
No, I mean Freud.
Oh, Freud. And in some, you know, he's looked at it, you know, he's a subconscious, some behavioralist pull from him. But his work is very vast, man. So you could research some of his early stuff, half workings, things not done, things touched on. I mean, he touched in a lot of bases, you know, which is why... When they start to teach psychology improperly, by the way, I think in school, they teach the history kind of beginning really with him. They go all the way back, you know, into some philosophical stuff, some demonic type era, how it changes. But when it blossoms into all the different theoretical approaches to psychology or aspects, you know, it starts to flower there. You know what I mean?
Very interesting. Yeah, fuck.
Yeah, I mean, I think you pull from, and I tried to quote everybody, and I know for a fact I did not cover everybody in here. I did like this long list of all the people that I, you know, was trying to pull from, but, you know, I was watching what would work, what wouldn't work, what, you know, what's taught. And I don't know if the fitness industry moves faster, but some of the shit that I was
learning. Oh, no, man. It definitely doesn't. It's just, it moves a little bit faster now because marketing exists. And the thing is with fitness, what made FP easier to sell, bro, is that I have all these pretty cool looking movements. And then that kind of like draws people in. It kind of draws people in to be like, okay, there's like an end product there. So I think because of that, it made it easier. But in general, even with that said, it's still, I mean, I guess if you look at it from a relative perspective, like, you know, I've only had FP for 5 to 6 years now online, I guess it's pretty quick. But for me, based upon how much work I've had to put in, it definitely hasn't seemed that fast. So I don't think it grows that fast. I happen to grind exceptionally hard compared to most, and because of that, it's probably grown more. But no, I don't think it grows. I don't think shit changes like that fast.
Well, and mental health, it doesn't either. Some of the shit that I was researching and learning about while I was getting the so-called education and certifications, I was going, this is fucking amazing. You know what I mean? Like, how come this isn't everywhere free? You know what I mean? Veterans are killing themselves at a fucking tragic rate. And we won't put this in every fucking facility. We won't just give them one of these. You know, I'm referencing EMDR. You know, there's certain ways to practice that. But there was certain just magnetic stimulation. There was all kinds of stuff on the forefront. And then I got planted in the number one place where the people that need it most need to recover. And they go, teach him the 12 steps and nothing else. And I was like, I didn't even have a fucking class on that. Most experience I had was when they told me to try to work the 12 steps when I was 22. You know what I mean? So I was like, wait, 13 fucking years. And you told me the steps then, and now I got to teach it now. And I'm, what the fuck is going on? You know? And so you'd see a slow implementation of CBT, right, starting to come in, cognitive behavioral therapy, which is really kind of Ellis Beck took that way. They had their separation later. But, you know, you see that, but it's such at a fucking snail's pace, like MAPS, right? You see MAPS doing their thing. Tim Ferriss is investing with, I forget the college, John Hopkins or something. So you're seeing what appears to be an explosion of outside use, psychedelics, MDMA, et cetera. But it's like, it moves at such a snail's fucking pace. It's ridiculous, man, of what you can implement, what people should know or try. It's why Wim Hof struggled in the beginning to get into this, right?
You know what I think is interesting? I think, I don't know if it was you that shared it or somebody else shared it. They said that science has become a new religion instead of actually a means of evaluating phenomenon.
Yeah,
that's really what it is. It's I this morning. It's funny because I always get like there's always some kind of inspiration that I get in the morning. Before I do a podcast with you, there's always some inspiration. And some guy's like, so what evidence do you have to support what you're showing? And it's like, and then I always ask Adam. I ask this all the time. I'm like, what do you want me to make evident? What do you want evidence of? And guess what kind of response I get? None. There is no response. They just stay quiet. People don't even know what they want to ask evidence for. It's like, be like, what do you want evidence of?
Jesus made the hurricane hit Louisiana. You mean like that, where it's just like, that did it. That's all. No evidence.
Exactly. It's ridiculous. It's like, what are you guys trying to make evident? And it's so hard. It's so hard to trust evidence because in terms of the way that it's produced in a scientific study, because you don't actually see what's going on there. It's not real science. You need to be able to actually see it. You feel what I'm saying?
Weird how we connect, and we all probably know that we have to experience it to learn it, and we won't listen to people, but yet we'll scream for science, which comes from other people, not our experiences, as if that will change how we believe, or are we just throwing darts at a motherfucker? You know what I mean?
It seems like all science, what science seems to be nowadays, is more of a, it's a vessel to justify whatever you believe, because if you go online, you can justify whatever you believe. Somebody will come up, they will fabricate some kind of evidence to say that what you believe right now already works. So it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether what you do works or not. It just matters whether somebody has fabricated information on that specific subject. And you know, that's it. It's okay. Somebody fabricated evidence, what we call evidence. Now I'm going to believe it because it's out there and it tends to be agreeable with my value systems.
Dude, we are so blind to that we understand that our government makes fake terrorist videos. Now I get the tactics.
Is that legit? Hold on. Is that actually legit? That whole thing with ISIS that they funded $500 million? Is that where is this information coming from?
They made fake terrorist videos to be able to see who would click on them, follow the videos to where they were harboring, where they were staying. It's a way they were doing indirect spying to get information to get inside, right? So creating misinformation, very Cold War, 1983, you know what I mean?
Fuck, that's the justification?
Yeah, and so... Look, if it's not true, then fuck it. It's still an interesting topic to explore. and if so, the idea that we're so like this that we don't even budge. Like we're it's almost like we know they fucking lie. Oh, science said 3 out of 4 doctors approved this toothbrush or dentist. You know what I mean? It's like we've been hit with it so much we expect to hear that the specialist guy or girl right here has approved it. You know what I mean? So we just...
That's unbelievable. It's not unbelievable. You can't... I read a book, Language and Thought in Action, a while back. I didn't even read through the whole thing because it was just such a... It was just so fucking... It's just one of those reads where you're just like, okay, 2-3 pages of it. And I'm just like, okay, I can't deal with this anymore. They almost made it too dense. But at some point they talk about how... Your own nervous system is not enough, and at some point you have to be willing to listen to other people because you can't research everything. It's like for me, I'm asking you about Freud right now because I'm like, okay, well, what I want to see what this guy has to say about Freud or what he's like, where his influences are coming from, like what the fuck is it? So
I like his dream book now, read it, but it's because he started talking about he saw a plant. It's lost now, a plant or something in a store in a dream that he ended up showing up to later in his future, right? So he's writing about, I mean, it gets deep, man. I mean, it gets out there.
Yeah, no, it's just like at some point we have to like accept that we need to trust other people. There's no ways around it. But the issue is, are people even trustworthy to begin with? Is the base of trust merited? In nature, you would have that. Because you would see, okay, can this guy throw a fucking spear or not? Can this person start a fire or not? Can this person make a canoe or not? Are these people you could see that. But in our culture, it's what's of particular interest to me is that you don't really see competence anywhere. Like if I fix something like – well, this was an argument. Last night this guy put up a post. Trust me, I'm a physiotherapist. It's the usual suspect. This guy is just I will use this term to describe him. He's a piece of shit, and it's exactly in those words. You know, I'm not apologetic for anything I say, and I will not say it, but he's sitting there trying to justify that Usain Bolt runs fast despite a scoliosis, so having a scoliosis is okay. When I've met so many people who have serious movement impairments, pain.
He said a bent spine doesn't matter?
Pretty much. Go on, bro. Go on my Functional Patterns Facebook page. Bro, Adam.
Bent spine doesn't matter.
Bro, this is the physiotherapist, and he's from the Netherlands. And in the Netherlands, they have some of the most stringent educational protocols out of anybody. They are strictly science based upon how they approach everything.
Yeah.
And so I'm like looking at this, and he's saying, yeah, having a crooked spine doesn't matter because Usain Bolt has that. And he's trying to say that if you're saying that the spine is supposed to be straighter, which nobody else other than me is, nobody other than the physical therapists that have been following the notion, like trying to correct things like kyphosis and whatnot. And there are things that are wrong with that, right? There, of course, the spine isn't always supposed to be perfectly straight. I would be the first person to agree with that. I would have even agreed with that in other situations, even in my deepest dogmatic days. I knew that the spine wasn't always supposed to be straight. It should have the capacity to become more straight. That's the whole point here. But this guy ends up putting this information out there, and it's, trust me, I'm a physiotherapist. That's what the page is actually called. Trust me, I am a physiotherapist. So if these people are the ones that say, okay, you need to trust me because I'm the professional. But then when the professional is saying that, yeah, the spine is okay to be crooked, and this is the deeper consequence to all this, Adam, has Usain Bolt ever been pushed or tackled at any point in his life while he's been running?
I don't know.
How important do you think it is to have a muscular connectivity to your body if somebody's going to tackle you?
If you're in a free sprint, you better be.
Right? If you're playing football.
Yeah, that's the difference between your life and death crossing the middle in the NFL.
Bingo. That's exactly a fucking point that I was going to talk about. A wide receiver crossing on a fucking slant and a safety coming in to decapitate him. So if you don't have muscular activity in that context, dude, you're going to get eaten up. So for one, Usain Bolt has never had to have taken impact from anybody. So because of that, his sprinting mechanics are very subjective because he's never taking impact. Number two, he's never actually had to take a lateral cut off of a sprint. So if he had to slow down and then cut laterally, how well do we know that he would do with that?
Is it the passive aggressive acceptance of the scoliosis, knowing that there's actually something to do about it that bothers you?
Oh, absolutely. Well, that's what it is. What they're trying to do is rather than say, and I have private messages.
Oh, shit. He got up. Huh? Here it comes. He got up.
I have private messages. This fucking guy. On Instagram, I actually have a screenshots of it, and it shows that he viewed it. And I said, I want to engage in scientific discussions. I know you know people in universities. I know you know different physical therapists that would probably be willing to do it. Let's put it to the test. And guess what? This was about 2-3 months ago. He hasn't responded with anything. Nothing. They know. I think subconsciously, bro, like the whole notions of you know, Freud and whatnot. I'm sure there's probably dreams that I'm inside of. When these guys go to sleep at night, and they probably end up seeing me going like, yeah, don't fuck with this guy. That's probably what they're thinking, man. So
sounds it's like just, pulling from a little bit of that Roger stuff, that whole accept it, you know, love yourself to this point. And look, I talk in the book, there's a difference between acceptance of self and indifference and apathy towards self, right? So when you just simply are apathetic towards self, that is not acceptance of self. You know what I mean?
There's a huge,
he's trying to play on that. You have a disease. You're an addict. It's not your fault of any kind, right? It's playing on that same notion of almost, right? Be passively acceptance of your crooked spine and you can run like Usain Bolt still.
That's exactly what it's like. Like, Adam, we all have limitations in this world.
Why do people go see him, though, for a profession?
I don't know.
To fix their spine, though, right?
No, not – who knows? Really, when you look at physical therapy and the way that it's done, bro, it's more localized manipulations. So it's like I do something with your ankle and then hopefully it connects with the rest of your brain. But since you're not in movement when I made that manipulation, the brain can't associate that it's going to transfer to movement. You see what I'm saying? So the association can't be made. So it's like when don't get me wrong, what they do works. It works. It's just temporary, which tends to be the issue. It's just a temporary fix. And what I'm providing is more of it's a long-term fix. It's like where if we employ these mechanical changes, and these mechanical changes can be seen in everything. I'm working on a video right now where I'm going to show mechanical, like the biomechanics of Usain Bolt running, Barry Sanders running, Jonix Alves, the guy that broke the baseball bat with a kick. You're going to see that their mechanics at a certain level, there's a biorhythm that they operate with that is identical. if you have a scoliosis while you elicit this biorhythm and you do certain types of movement, you're going to hurt yourself big time.
Why wouldn't that transfer down to a whole bunch of other shit? Couldn't we imagine how fast would Usain Bolt be if?
Of course. And guess what somebody wrote on that post, actually? That exact same thing that you said. It's like, how fast would he be if he didn't have this potential impairment holding him back? Why not ask that question and run the testing? And what I always end up asking these guys is, I saw an interview of
you'll be a hater. You'll be
of course, of course, you can't absolutely.
Other people's science and be that that's hating.
You, I watched an interview with Dr. Dre where, you know, Dr. Dre was one of the most hated producers out there. Like, people hated on that motherfucker like crazy. And at some point, he said, "Look, until you can do what I can do, your opinion means nothing. Your opinion doesn't mean jack shit because you can't do what I can do." So essentially, I end up telling it's people want evidence of something, but I'm like, okay. What I want you to do is be able to execute somebody to take a curve away from a spine the way that I get somebody to do it in 30 seconds or in 20 seconds. I want you to do the same thing and then ask me the question ask me what evidence do I have to support what I do. But if you can't even do that basic thing, then what does it mean from any point after that? And what I find fascinating is that, you know, as people, we're doing smart things by putting our trust into established figures and people that have gotten the education. So you can't blame people. The thing is, they're allowing their nervous system to give trust to people that should merit that. The problem is they haven't provided, from what I can see, adequate evidence to merit that trust. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, talking about the people we don't trust, you know, for me, it's not that I don't necessarily am scared of or don't trust. I'm going left here again. The government, like that video I posted, man, it's those that obey it that scare me, because that's the masses, and those that breed the nationalism, breed the, and you can trickle that down to mental health, fitness, or anywhere else. It's those that simply obey because they're told that a authority or credentials or a vote or a boss says so. And because of that, that's what you do. And it's that majority that does that fucking, that terrifies me. That's scary. Because that creates the nationalism, that creates the Nazi party, that creates those factions, right? Is the following based on because they said so, I'm supposed to, rather than the questioning of those things humbly, right? Questioning that we don't know, and then the exchanging of that knowledge and competence fairly and transparently for growth and subjective perception and decision in that moment. But we're shaped, man. That's where it starts, man.
Absolutely. Because you think of, okay, this guy just said something really arrogant by saying that scoliosis pretty much doesn't matter. He puts that out there. And think of,
it's kind of passive. What kind of scientist goes, you know, oh, I know what kind. The kind that go, addiction's a disease. There, we've solved it.
Exactly. they run up a statement. They put a statement out there knowing that people are impressionable and don't really think. They provide no – that's the issue though, Adam. Like if any scientific study for myself to believe it, I need to see video. I need to see – like when I saw Pavlov with the dog, when I saw Pavlov feeding the kid cookies and then you see his mouth going – after they set up a whole thing without him, he involuntarily does this. Yeah. He thinks he's gonna get, like, that to me is believable science.
Look up. This is a deep journal from way back. Dude got a lot of he got a lot of PETA flack for this shit, but it was kind of, he didn't hurt nobody or anything. But look up Dr. Rybeck and the drunk goldfish research.
Is there a video on it or what exactly?
No, you're gonna have to get in the archives, bro. You're gonna have to use words and read.
Oh man, see, but I don't. Okay. With that said, in modern, I could understand it if it was back in the day when there was no video.
I'll bring it up. I'll send it to you. But if you can find it, it's Dr. Rybeck, R Y Beck, but B A C K, Dr. Rybeck, sorry. But yeah. And the drunken goldfish. Look that shit up and you can pull from that just a behavioral operation of kind of how we do with alcohol.
That's interesting, but I'll have to take that. Take that up later. Send me the link later.
I'm linking it because when you feed a stimuli like fitness, that does link to a reward or a rewarding state. When you say what you do about yoga or anything else that typically has transformed this person's life from what it used to be to what they wanted or what they were sold it was supposed to be. when they've achieved that and you knock on that, they see that as, whoa, how dare you, rather than this, okay, I got competent here and got this far. How much further and more competent can I get to get that far, right? Rather than that's that HC principle. There's no humbled practice of competence obtaining. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. And just like I said, man, in modern times, what I find of more particular fascination to me, bro, is how we can document things much more clearly. Like my biggest concern with science is the fabrication of evidence that you can just blatantly lie, and that people like Adam, I have dealt with some people in my life, like in terms of the drama and shit like that, especially in the last year and a half, I can't even the amount of douchebaggery that people can elicit when they would want to see you fail is unbelievable. And a collective group of people will lie blatantly. Fuck, the whole group of people will lie. It's not like, okay, you have one little fucking devious guy lying there. You can get a collection of 10 people that are lying sacks of shit, and they know that they are fucking lying, and they will all buy into this lie just to fuck you over. So when I see that, even in my own personal experience, I can't help but think that a collection of 1,000 scientists could be lying to themselves and trying to perpetuate that same fucking lie and fabricating information in the way that they do. I find it hard to believe that that couldn't be the case. Whether it's thousands, hundreds of thousands of scientists, we can all believe in the same lie. And as long as nobody's ever calling – at the end of the day, this is what it comes down to, man. I don't know, like maybe about – what was it? This was about 5 years ago. I trained a fighter. He wound up getting TKO'd. And prior to that, I was doing all my FP movements with him and whatnot. And I saw him training, and he really wasn't putting in that much work in the way that he was supposed to. He wasn't sparring with the right people that he could have been sparring with and all that. And I was like, fuck it, whatever. I was like, you know what? He seems like a pretty talented guy. I'll just go with what he's got. He ends up getting fucking TKO'd. I was devastated, bro, devastated. And I was like, man, functional patterns doesn't even work. This shit's – the hell did it do if he just wanted to get TKO'd like that? And then I started seeing, okay, there's more variables that I need to look at. Is he getting good sparring? Does he have adequate grappling coaches? Is he getting good – are the ways that I'm teaching him even adequate? Are they really preparing him for the environment, or is his fight or flight going to override everything that I taught him, which is exactly what happened? So at that point, I was like, damn. You know, when you actually get exposed, when you actually put your shit out there and people are able to see it, you have no choice but to become more competent. You have to become that. But I think in our culture, we don't have that, you know?
Right. And then ultimately, though, what would they tell you? Oh, I got to experience it. So first we cast the stone, we cast the judgment from some area of non-knowing, and then go, well, I haven't experienced it. No, I haven't tried it. You know what I mean? So you get that immediate judgment, man. That's... I mean, I don't know. Is it crazy for us, man, to picture? Because in my mind, what I picture is a room of great men and women and all in between with experience and ideas from everywhere that find an interest and a draw to something, that choose to go, you know what? How about this? Okay, let's work that. How about this, right? Those minds. Like,
let me put it this way, Adam. If I could get a whole group of scientists that say that the monetary system is inherently corrupt and that there is a potential influence that they're going to have because of the monetary system, and they all come to this, like, geez, this is fucking hard.
I'm going to add one, man, and one that was a, let's just say, a revelation to me one night. But add one to those two things you said would be some desire inside to do something great. I would urge people to examine that voice, that reason, or what that means, and seriously focus on the space around you and focus on being more of a great person than doing some great thing.
Yep. Well, that's, I always tell people that that's one of the main things that I always tell in my courses, that if you want to be a great trainer, first you have to be a really good person. You have to ask yourself, am I trying to be a good person? Am I trying to be a legitimate person?
I think you're saying, are you genuine or empathetic? You know, really, because in therapy, they tell you the same stuff. It's not about what you know. 90% of being a therapist or a counselor is who you are. You know, are you genuine?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That makes all kinds of sense. If you're just there to collect a paycheck, you're not going to help anybody, and nor are you going to help yourself. It's just like the key point is, I think, to some degree or the other, we have to ask ourselves, are we really helping people? Are we really, and this is another big one, Adam, are we really earning our keep amongst the rest of the tribe? That's, I don't think most people ask that question. Am I really earning my fucking, the money that I'm earning? Or am I really earning the money that I'm working for? You know, did I really do a good job with these people? I think most of the time, especially in the fitness industry, man, I just think of that like all the trainers that don't come to my seminars that work at a 24-hour fitness. I've never had a single 24-hour fitness trainer come to one of my courses. It's rare. It's not because they don't make money. I went to 24 and I made some decent money when I was there. It's just most of those people that are at those gyms are simply there just to collect a paycheck. The bars has been dropped low, man. You know what it is, I think, bro, is the fact that we don't hold each other accountable enough for what the fuck we do, man. So it's kind of like if you look at engineers, they all do pretty good work. They all do very good work, actually. You look at the buildings all around, like Seattle's full of skyscrapers and shit like that, and I don't see any of them toppling over. Their wind hitting them and all this shit. They have a particular form of they have a particular set of standards that they have to abide by. But we don't really extend that into anything else in society. And so it's like, I think even with other people, I think if we held each other to a particular set of standards of like, look, dude, if you start buying all this excess shit, which is kind of what I try embodying in FP, where it's like, look, you're behaving this way, you're dressing this way, you're putting these pictures on Instagram this way, you're whatever, and it's because you're trying to create some kind of a fucking of an image. You know what I mean?
I loved it, bro. Because when I was getting into this, you and I were on the phone. I'm like, all right, what do I need to get here to start this at the house? And you're like, that, all that shit. That was it. You know what I mean? I didn't have to go out and buy a whole bunch of kind of crazy shit. You know, for the most part of what I was doing, what you and I had talked about, it was like, yep, things I could pick up on. You know what I mean? It's, yep, like fucking $15 or something. Absolutely. You know what I mean? Of shit. That's it. And all your shit on YouTube, everything that you need, dude, I can, you know what I mean? As far as I've gotten and just what's out there, are you kidding?
Yep.
You know, the fact that somebody would ever say something about you marketing and making all this kind of money on your shit compared to what people hoard from the ingredients in their shit to the lies of their science and study is crazy. To what you do, it's not even close. Hell, Drew Peters was on this podcast, who is a master formulator for major companies of supplements that will go unnamed, and quite gotten further up in the ladder. But on that podcast, he's like, look, they do research studies to fund it. They'll call in 10 people, have them do something for 2 weeks, 7 of them lose weight, and they'll put on the label 70% of people lost fucking weight. You know what I mean? Or saw results, saw a gain. And he's like, it's true, but 70% of the 10 fucking people that we studied, you know what I mean?
Unbelievable, bro. That's
the master dude. I mean, there's, when you're a formulator, you can formulate for multiple big companies, you know? So when you're talking about major mass companies, dude, like, just what, how many companies really make most of the products out there? I think it's like, what, fucking 12, 13,
you know? Jesus. Yeah, of course. It's a small family, pretty much. It's, yeah, it's a family of a bunch of inbred fucking rich people that are fucking hoarding everything, and they own pretty much everything. So yeah, it's hard to not feel that they are influencing everything. It's really, really difficult to not feel that way. If you stay somewhat informed as to what the fuck is going on, it's just like it's very complicated, man. I don't think there's a particular standard that we hold ourselves to. I think the bar is just so fucking low that the notions of raising the bar or raising the standard it doesn't even matter to most people, because I think it doesn't matter to most people mainly because nobody's pushing the envelope. Nobody gives a shit. I think it has to start with people giving a shit and
trying to make their own fucking envelope and sell it. That's the problem.
Exactly. That's exactly it. It's just everybody's trying to figure, okay, how do I make my money? You have to realize in functional patterns, man, that's what I've had to deal with a lot in terms of for the first 7 years, 6 years that I really started functional patterns, for the first, like up until maybe about a year ago, everything was about filtering those people out, where everybody's thinking, okay, how do I make a buck off of this without necessarily having to align with how this guy thinks, rather than thinking, okay, how do I align myself? Is this even something that I can even align with my values? Am I even capable of doing that? That was never the question. Most of the time it was like, okay, how do I make money off of this, whether I align with this or not? Which to me is fucking crazy, because anytime I've dealt with any business, any supplement company that contacted me, any fitness. You know what's crazy, Adam? I remember I had this. I'm gonna throw his name out. I don't give a shit. His name is Juan Carlos Santana. This guy called me out maybe about 3 years ago, and he was saying that I was a fraud and all this shit. And guess what? He had done about a year and a half prior to that. He had sent me. He personally had sent me an email with this product he was trying to sell me, and I never responded. How do I know that to some degree or the other, this guy's not thinking, oh, he's an arrogant little shit. And how do I know that he wouldn't have tried to cut me down if I would have started buying his products? How do I know that wouldn't have been the case? It's just to me, when people tend, and this is to me, this, I remember I watched the Jock Fresco interview, and he was talking about that people can only work on things in which they're going to gain, they're going to also have a gain with, like, if all parties are making a gain, then people can agree and people can communicate with one another. But if somebody has kind of a disagreement and another person has an agreement with certain things and there's a divide, now the, or let me put it this way, if somebody stands to make money and one person stands to not make money, and that's the main goal, that's the main objective, then there's going to be a divide at some point with that. And so for myself, what I've learned through my experience, through all this shit, is that most people in general are just trying to find the next scheme to make money for doing nothing. That's in general how people are thinking, where they don't want to work. They may start a podcast for about 20 episodes and then they'll probably drop off. Whereas your ass, you've been in the fucking, you've been grinding, doing this shit for how long? Clearly, you have a passion for this shit, and that's what's going to get you to fucking ride through it. That's what I saw. I was like, she's fucking guy. When I fucking first, I didn't realize that when we first talked, I didn't realize you already had like 60-some podcasts prior to me even being here. I was like, Jesus, sure. Fucking guy is a grinder. Okay. I'm like, shit.
Yeah,
okay.
Episode 69.
Yeah, so I was like, geez, this fucking guy is grinding. But bro, most people don't think that way. Most people are thinking, okay, how do I make money right now in the short term? How do I get this get rich quick scheme? Well, most people aren't thinking, I got to grind, you know?
That's the sell to the youth too, bro. Like I've had to fight this off from almost like a fucking disease from my daughter, man, is they are sold so hard that hidden beneath them somewhere is this God-given, if you will, natural talent of celebrityisms that will bring them all the riches and things they want in the world. They just have to be discovered and they just have to find what does it. So they try a bunch of shit. And then if it magically doesn't become their natural stardom, they go, oh, that's not it. So they're living under this belief that we're all American idols, where it's all buried beneath us somewhere. And what you have to do is spend all your time trying a bunch of stuff, not having to work hard at it, maybe working hard to get the shot at
it. God damn, bro. That's so legit.
So then they go, oh, I can't naturally dunk. I'm not a basketball player.
Damn, you know, homie.
I can't do that. And so what they're doing is running around, trying a bunch of shit, looking to go, where's my Michael Jordan? I'm LeBron 2 somewhere. They told me that, damn it. I'm special and unique. So if I haven't made it, then you're not going to tell me I'm not special. It's because of my parents, the environment, the structure. It's rather than going, wait, I have to master something. We appreciated the masters of paint and art and cinema because you couldn't just whip it together. A motherfucker had to do some shit.
Of course.
And I'm going to connect. I used to be a DJ back when you had to be in mixed vinyl. And I quit being a DJ the day I saw CDJ show up because I went, now everybody's a fucking DJ. You touch a button, match the numbers, and you hit sync. And I went, well, that's over. That's fun. And everybody's like, why'd you quit? I'm like, are you kidding? Give it a year or two. Watch what happens. It was gone. You know what I mean? And
that's crazy, man. That's
so everyone's looking for that. Then combine that with everyone now from social media wants to believe, hey, I can post on Instagram and make a couple billion dollars if it gets going. You know, I'll just stage a couple pictures and then,
Adam, you yeah. are just describing some of these fucking people that I was talking about to a fucking, I mean, holy shit, bro.
I'm watching motherfuckers play craps with rigged dice thinking they're going to win, bro.
But it's like, what I think is crazy is I remember when I'd have some of these people and I'd give them a platform on my Instagram, everything about the few videos that they would post up on social media was about, okay, I have to fucking make this go viral. And I would even get the questions, do you think this might go viral, bro? I'm like, well, I've made videos thousands of times more informative than the one that you did. I've given more information. It was more clear cut, and I've made videos that were more entertaining than what the fuck you had, with crazy slow motion and music that I produced myself and everything. And that didn't go viral. But yeah, your video might go viral, bro. And then when it wouldn't happen, it's almost like they would get disappointed. I'm like, really, bro? You just think there's going to be some fucking magic? Like, I think of the people that have, because now I'm having people in functional patterns. Anybody who takes my courses, now I'm having, because I've had so many of these dumb shits, bro, I'm making everybody sign, which is what every company would do, a non-disclosure agreement.
You should.
I'm making everybody do that. And you probably saw that on the, maybe on the FP Doers page or something like that. But
I feel like I got to step back from it and go, but I applaud those that jump into some new shit and say, I'm going to fucking do this or try this. I applaud that effort. You know what I mean? I do. But to think like I purposely did Adam's Rampage social media videos to begin with years ago, tried to when I first woke the fuck up. So A, I look like shit. I didn't care about my background. That's why sometimes I was shirtless and didn't think about it. I was sitting in a green chair with a yellow fucking concrete wall. Like, I didn't give a fuck. Like, I purposely tried to make a video to where I went like, this isn't for viral. This is transparency of what I'm saying. You know what I mean? And And I remember that shit, but this, fuck, dude, I remember 60 listeners, bro. I remember 5 thumbs ups and likes and going, well, look at that. That's cool. But you can't do this grind for that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course. But even beyond that, Adam, at least you're being real about it, which most people are not real about this kind of shit. And they continue to just perpetuate these fucking behaviors without ever being like, okay, well, this is – bro, when I run my courses, there's a point where I'll teach people like with videos and whatnot. I'll be like, look, you guys notice how I position this camera here? I'm doing that with a specific intent to show dominance and authority. You guys notice how I move my hands in this particular way when I speak?
It's always make me insecure in your videos, bro. I don't like that shit.
No, I mean, that's not my intent, motherfucker.
I can't.
You guys notice how the camera is down here and not up here? Because if it was up here, hold on, some people are just like freaking blowing up my Facebook. Hold on, man. Jesus Christ. Come on, guys.
Yeah, you make me feel terrible. I'm like, look at this motherfucker punk.
But see, if it was up here, then it's like, okay, now he's submissive. It's like, blah, blah. But it's like, no, it has to be down here.
Because if it's down here, that's now it's like POV porn. That's why that shit looks bad, man. That's why it's submissive. What the fuck, man? That's
yeah, exactly. Well, I'm not trying to be that submissive person doing the POV shit, dog. Right, okay.
Look up, honey. Look up.
But see now, like where I'm at right now. Now you guys are beneath me, and I'm a short guy, so I got to get every. I don't know. There was this one time where I would train these clients, and one of them he had a cocker spaniel, and the other one was a golden retriever, and they would always beef. And I guess one day the Cocker Spaniel was like, you know, they were beefing and the Cocker Spaniel was the alpha. And then the, you know, the Golden Retriever was the beta. And then one day the Golden Retriever started trying to get like buck
Dude,
up on
talking
him. Right?
About a cock and a retriever.
Uh-huh.
Of course, the retriever is the submissive there at that moment. You're talking.
OK, about but then the retriever was about to exceed its freaking its genetics and say, OK, I'm going to start becoming alpha. So then what does a Cocker Spaniel do? It jumps on the couch and gets higher ground to then be able to look down on the dog. And then the other one immediately submitted after that. So me being the smaller Cocker Spaniel or potentially the Chihuahua, I got to get every advantage that I can get. That's really the way the ball bounces. But at the end of the day, I'm being honest with it, bro. I know I'm being manipulative. I know I'm being a piece of shit in that regard. But the ends justifies the means, essentially, for me, man. That's why I essentially do it. But with that said, people do all this shit and they hope that you don't see it. But then you see it and you're just like, dude, there's people eventually that are going to be smart enough to see what you're actually doing. That's what I write on. Functional Patterns rides on people actually seeing these types of behaviors and being like, oh, look at now, he's being a trickster. He's being a little fucking trickster. At least he's being honest with it, but the guy's being a fucking trickster. There's no doubt about it. Whereas other people are doing it saying, okay, I'm going to be a trickster, but I hope you don't notice what I'm doing. I hope, because otherwise, you know, it's going to look bad, and I don't want to portray that image. Me, I don't care about portraying the image, man. I'm not trying to hide anything, nor am I trying to make myself a saint, because I've done things that are completely dishonest. But it's like they're dishonest with the end goal of trying to fix people's postures and making them better, you know?
Survival in the game that's been created is a different ball game, my friend.
Yeah, of course. And that's all I'm trying to do is just play within the confines of the things that I have to do to get this thing to fucking grow. So it's like if I didn't take these approaches.
That's what my lawyer said all those years ago, too, man.
But yeah, man, at the end of the day, it's like you got to try shit. You do got to try shit. But you also have to ask yourself, are you doing this solely because of fame, or are you doing this because you genuinely want to see? Are you doing this to try and help humanity or not? Because we're not going to make it unless we all start fucking having some kind of an intent like this at some point or the other. We have to have the intent of wanting to help humanity to some degree or the other at some point or the other.
Well, you got to know the motives and expectations. I mean, do you step in driven with an expectation of going somewhere out here? I'm going to show up and I'm just going to be fucking, you know, the man. I'm just going to be the woman. I'm just going to be awesome at this. And it'll naturally happen. And that's what they've been selling them. I don't think they meant to indirectly sell that as much as they did by selling the dream of being that and then making it appear as if it was easy for everyone to become that. And I think maybe fallout from that campaign, if you will, has created that idea of, holy shit, everyone really thinks they can be on the fucking Wheaties box now.
Yep, totally. Where it's like, no, these are the exceptions, people. And it's, why do you want to be an exception? I'd rather just be one of the people that fits in or whatever, that's just healthy. Seriously. I mean, I got a little bit of fame, Adam, and I've told you before. It's like, bro, the little bit of fame that I have is too much. All the pictures, and I don't mind it. Like, to my people that take my classes, I don't mind taking the pictures. But if I had to do that every day, oh my God, I would mind it. I would mind it. But it's like, I don't like it. I don't like when people ask you for your fucking autograph, and I say, no, I'm not going to fucking sign that damn thing. I'm not going to autograph anything. I don't want to do that. Like, I don't want to, I'm not trying to put a value on my fucking signature. Like, that's ridiculous. Like, I just can't, I myself, if you want to do it, cool, but it's not for me. But with that said, it's like, why do you want to be famous? You have any idea how many more responsibilities you have to have? Just be competent. Be a competent individual. Be really good at your fucking job. Become indispensable in your community. Make a good living. Take a lot of time off. It's not that hard.
I can tell you. You know, I'll talk to some hard parts about it, though. Honestly, bro, I'm gonna be real for a minute, man. And you know, I was talking to my friend AB the other day, and this sort of idea came out. And you know, when you begin to awake, if you will, and see the world for what it is and other things, what happens is you tend to become isolated. You don't mean to, but you tend to, and the competence isolates you when you choose not to, when you choose to pay attention rather than live in the cognitive dissonance. You know, I joke a lot, you become the guy who's no longer cool at the party. Like I know I am. I'm very aware that I can hang out for a little bit. Somebody will say something and I'm kind of like, yeah, but do you even know that? You know what I mean? And next thing I know, the dude next to me is like, dog, I just want to eat a hamburger on Sunday, dude. You know what I mean? I'm like, do you know what's in that fucking hamburger? You know what I mean? You don't mean to be that person. But when you start to do that, you can feel isolated, right? And then here's the connection, though, man, is what happens is you start to look for people that identify or connect or think like you. That's kind of what the Tribe of Change is, almost like a unity.
Absolutely. Yes.
And
yes, sir.
What happens is in that lone wolf, what lone wolves do, there's stories of lone wolves that aren't told in Native American legends, are the stories of when the lone wolves meet each other on their journeys. When they're not lone wolves in those moments, they share hunts together. Lone wolves that cross each other many times will team up to tag health and then move on. And what I was talking to AB about is the struggle becomes hard because the more you become isolated because you don't buy into the dream, to the plasticity of that plastic picture, the more you avoid Norman Rockwell, the more you become ostracized because just simply by being, you challenge the beliefs of those in your life that have chosen to be. And as you do that, lone wolves will enter your life that you connect with, you being one of those in my life now.
Yep.
That connect, and the tough part becomes you try to hold on to those lone wolves, even though you begin to become more awake that people in our lives, remotely everyone, are seasonal. And yep. If you are truly awake, then you will rotate in a life of seasonality. And as if you flow that way and can be aware of that, then when you run across those other lone wolves in your life, you can then appreciate them for the journey and the story you all will share. And it doesn't have to be this pressing moment of holding on to another social construct of some lifelong kinship.
Yep. Well, I think another thing is, Adam, we're not that alone anymore. There's not that many lone wolves anymore. We're starting to fucking – it's – this shit's growing, bro. We're not alone anymore. There's a lot of us out there. There's a lot of us motherfuckers out there.
Me and you. You know what I mean? Bigger lone than me and you. Fuck, Jack's one of those guys. He's been out there lone wolfing for fucking a decade and a quarter. You know what I mean?
That's what I'm saying. But now we're not lone wolves. That's just the whole thing. We're a fucking pack now. Real. That's what I'm seeing it with, at least with functional patterns, even the tribe of change shit. There's a pack. Like, even this is what I find fascinating, because within any group of people, there's always going to be drama within it. But what I think is awesome about FP, bro, is that, you know, people may have their little fucking things or whatever it may be. Eventually, they squash that shit, because when somebody decides to talk shit on FP, guess what these fools do? They fucking, exactly. They're like, oh, you want to fuck with FP? Oh, you want to talk? All those people that kind of have those little fucking disputes that maybe they didn't feel it's each other, whatever.
Very gypsy-like. We'll take you in with open. It's very gypsy like. We'll take you in with open arms. Shit's all good. We love you. And then it's like, hold up, dog. What'd you say? You know nobody's down here, right?
Exactly. So then at that point they converge and say, "Nah, homie, let's cut that shit down right now." Okay, now it's boom, 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 and they all come together when the shit comes down. At the end of the day, that's the way life should work anyway. Maybe we have our little philosophical disputes about how we go about things or whatever. But at the end of the day, if you fuck with functionality, you're gonna get eaten up by the same two people that may not like each other. They're going to both eat you up and become homies that day. And what I find that's fascinating about it is that when that shit does happen, you see people that maybe didn't get along that great begin to get along really fucking well after that, where they're like, okay, yeah, we're homies now.
That's that, okay. That whole coaching thing too, man. Like the
It's like when two people get into fighting a war, right? When you get two soldiers that are in a war and they're like, okay, now we have a camaraderie that lasts an entire lifetime. Bonding. And a lot of
bonding, bonding and fear is strong.
Exactly, and that's pretty much what ends up happening. Is like, you know what? Somebody wants to take our shit. Nah, homie. Now we're gonna take that. We're gonna take that completely away, and it's not gonna work that way. So at the end of the day, bro, we're not alone anymore. It's a matter of, you know, just continually. I think there's enough people willing to have those uncomfortable, so-called uncomfortable conversations where it's not going to be uncomfortable anymore. There's a reason that more organic restaurants are being pushed everywhere. That more organic foods are being pushed everywhere, because there's enough people saying, like, you know what's in that food. And then people are like, yeah, I know. You know what? We probably shouldn't be eating that shit anymore. So things are changing, man, fortunately. Hey, so it's like,
can't alienate people through fast food shaming.
Huh?
I said, we can't alienate people through fast food shaming.
Bro, how many here in Seattle or most places where I go, bro, I barely see any McDonald's or Burger Kings anymore. Right. Those guys are getting screwed big time. They're not making the money that they once were making.
So is it okay to fast food shame, just not fat shame?
Hmm.
I don't know what the fucking rules are anymore, man. From what I heard, I can't say crazy anymore either. So, I mean, it's getting limited, you know? Fuck, it's that balance, bro. Hey, man, it's getting hot as fuck in the cave right now, dude.
Yeah, I got to get out of here too, bro. I got to go take – I just got a – I actually just acquired an off-road utility vehicle, and I need to get make sure that it's actually operational. My parents just got it, and I just acquired another good, and yeah.
Let's get that motherfucker down here, man, and we'll. You know what? Look, the rule is we don't take any gadgets, GPS's, phones when we go. We go by weather, track, storm, etc. But I may have to take a picture because I'm gonna want to see your reaction when that little, when that first little 5 foot, 6 foot shark, gray, lemon, or bull kind of follows you for a minute and bumps the investigation kayak. I want to watch the reaction.
Oh dear God! Fuck that. Okay, I'll eventually do that with you, bro. But I'm gonna be fucked.
You're like, can we paddle closer to shore, man? I'm like,
yeah, exactly.
You know that's exactly where they hunt at, though, right?
On shore.
Yeah, well, because they're gonna come in shallow for the bait fish that are up on the thing. You don't want to be swimming in the bait. You know what I mean?
Fuck, dude, that's fucking crazy. Anyway, well, dude, let's do another podcast maybe next week or something like that if you're down.
Yeah, all the time, anytime, brother. Shit, we could just cut the mic on anytime, man.
Hell yeah, I'm down.
Oh, dude, I'm glad again you're home safe, bro. I'm back home. I got to shoot out there too one day too. I'm talking all
absolutely, time. Man. I got there's some dope dude. Washington's amazing, but yeah, we'll talk some more later on, man.
All right, bro, man. Love you, homie. Take care.
Likewise, we'll take care, man.